Perkins driving in, centrally to find Mills! Oh, that is outstanding! Top left corner, George Mills! Something out of nothing! Unbelievable strike from George Mills!
Welcome to a very special edition of the Pitch to Par podcast. We've been very gracious to be in your home, Lubo, and very gracious to have you on the podcast. We're very honoured to have, you know, a bona fide legend of Australian football on our pod. Yeah, we really appreciate you taking time out of your day to speak to us. You know, George, I mean, it's when I mentioned that we could get him on, like, you know, buzzing. Yeah,
absolutely. No, it was. I mean, I think anyone of a certain age, especially in my era growing up, my generation would know who Lubo is and have great admiration for him and the career that he's had. And so I think for me as well as, you know, again, seeing him as a young kid and exactly knowing who you are and watching you from a TV, it's pretty surreal to be in the same room. And to be honest, I'm probably most excited about hearing about Lubo's career and some of the challenges he faced and some of the stories he has to share as well. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Thank you so much again. And
Thanks for reaching out, and thank you for providing a platform for me to share my story with others and taking an interest, you know. I'm happy to divulge.
Perfect. Well, I think we'll go from, you know, the top, you know, Chelsea Hajduk, now Dandong City, obviously, you know, AIS, Perth Glory, like sort of, it's quite a rapid progression. And I guess obviously you came through during the NSL era towards the back end of that. Sort of describe your sort of beginnings in football, sort of at would you call it Hajduk or just like Dandong City?
Well, it's Dandy City now, but back then obviously it was Chelsea Hajduk. Two different clubs really. Now that they're part of the NPL, I guess the foundations are still there, but they're a different model. But, you know, I played there for 7 years and then, you know, needed to sort of leave the club to realise my dreams. And I was at Kingston for maybe half a season or a season in the youth league back then. I was at Bulleen for a season, VIS. Then from the VIS to the AIS. And I guess that's when things really start getting interesting, because then you realise that you've got a chance of becoming a pro. It doesn't guarantee you, though. And a lot of my teammates never went on to play professionally. Once you start stepping into seniors, it gets quite cutthroat and players fall away quite quickly. But I was lucky enough to, have somewhat of a smooth trajectory. Playing for a lot of the teams that I played for, I was lucky enough to be recognised as a talent, and people obviously helped me along the way.
Beautiful. And you mentioned your time at the AIS. What was that experience like? Because I know the AIS for me was, I missed out on that because I went overseas so young. But a lot of my teammates, they were like sort of like the last generation of the AIS before they just shut down all the program. What was your experience of the AIS like?
I'm not alone in saying that it was the time of my life. A lot of the players that went through said that since then, well, after I left the AIS, it became business. And that was the last time that they played for fun, pure enjoyment, even though we were training very hard and we were in a professional setup. You become basically brothers. It's like being on camp.
Yeah.
You know, when you're living with your best mates and you're doing something that you love and everything's provided for you. You know, it's up to you to turn up and train your ass off, so to speak. But, you know, it was the coolest time ever.
Yeah. 100%. I think that's the feedback that I got. And obviously a lot had changed by the time sort of my age groups were in there, because they sort of weren't staying on campus anymore. They were staying in digs and stuff like that because of all the issues they were having with the football team.
Yeah, it's a shame because it wouldn't have been the same experience. It still would have been good, but, you know, that program provided Australia with a lot of Olympians and Socceroos.
Yeah.
It's a shame that it no longer exists, and it's a shame that they no longer saw the benefit in having the team there and having the team on campus. You know, we all look back on it fondly, but, you know, there are reasons probably that we don't know why that no longer exists. I know Ernie Merrick now with the FA is trying to implement a new institute program in each of the states. So hopefully that gives us a better talent pool as well.
Absolutely. I think it's definitely related to sort of the maturation of like A-League academies. I think we're seeing that recently. I think with Melbourne City, probably the best example, like Jordan Boss, Marco Tilio, Well, you didn't really come through the academy like Sydney FC, produced a lot of young kids, but I think it's a very different mentality now compared to that of when obviously you were in the AIS. I think now we have more sort of professional setups, but like as like I think I listened to a Mark Viduka interview a few years ago. It's like the academies there are like the same as in Europe, like, and we don't get that here anymore, regardless of where you go. I'm not sure if like you feel the same, because obviously you've trained at like, you know, professional clubs in the A League, and you as well. Like, but I think it's very sort of, if we have that here in Victoria or in Australia, I think we'll be better for it. But I don't think there's an appetite from youngsters to exactly go to the AIS, like uproot their life. Because, you know, people get comfortable in their own environments, I think.
I mean, I don't know. It doesn't exist. It's hypothetical. You know, I know back in our day, it was a be-all and end-all. You had a greater chance of making it as a pro footballer if you went through the AIS. It wasn't the only pathway. Obviously, George made it through different avenues, and so did Harry and Chulina and all these other players. It's not the only way to make it in football, but I know for a lot of us, getting there gave us a greater opportunity, because you're training against the best every day in a professional environment, and you're away from home. So it's getting you ready for the challenges of being a pro footballer. What you mentioned then about players not wanting to uproot themselves, they're playing the wrong sport, then they should convert to AFL quickly, because the reality is with soccer, you leave home young. Mm-hmm. And that's a reality that you all, how to say, you're lucky if you get to leave home. I'll put it that way. If you're in that game and you get the opportunity to go to Holland, Croatia, Switzerland, Germany, France, doesn't matter where, you're one of the lucky ones. So for you to be playing soccer and you want to be comfortable, like what you said, that is the problem with the game today, is that the kids are too comfortable and they're not desperate enough. We never came back from Europe because there was no A-League. That's why that golden generation exists. It's because they were desperate to make it. Kids aren't desperate anymore. It's way too comfortable. And Neil, you summed it up perfectly.
Yeah, I guess sort of like leading into that NSL factor, you were at the Perth Glory when they were at the peak of their powers.
Yeah, the best, right? No.
The best. Like the Perth
Myself
Glory.
And Ivan Ergic having a laugh, but anyway. And the rest. I was very lucky because that team was littered with Socceroos. So for us young guys coming into that team, we were surrounded by players who had played at the very top. So we were really fortunate to be able to shine on that stage. But that was only because we had that stability around us, you know. Petkovic, Despotovsky, Mori, Halpern, Naven, Buljubasic, I mean, Tchaikovsky, the list goes on. Weirman in midfield. And yeah, we were quite fortunate to come into a team that was full of stars, really.
Yeah, and I guess sort of like, how was it like being involved in the NSL at that time? You know, I was born in 2002, so like I had the NSL for 2 years. I wasn't conscious enough to actually understand what was going on. I'm not sure what your exposure to the NSL was like.
I had South Melbourne.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit older than you, and the team that I saw, and you know players very well, would be Vaughan Coveney and Kompotianis, Trimmers, you know, those sorts of players, and Stasiadis in goal. So those are the sort of players I got to see at the back end of the NSL.
That was a great team, and South were one of the best. That era of Ange being involved, playing against Melbourne Knights, obviously that was a team that I supported as a kid. So great players played for both clubs and continue to do so. Mm-hmm. And playing for Perth back then, Perth sort of all of a sudden were the new ones on the block. They had the money to get the players over west. They had the crowds. So it was very attractive to a lot of us to go play there. Yeah. And it was a great time. It was probably the last sort of, I don't know, they were probably the last years of the NSL whilst it was still good. I think it fell away after that.
Yeah, no.
And when I say good, I mean for varying reasons it fell away. But I think they were some of the last years of it being a competition that was sort of, you know, able to produce players.
Luba, I'd like to touch on the different sort of segments to what Neil asked, but probably more personal to you, is before you became a pro and before you did sort of realise your dreams in that sense, who would you regard as the most influential figure in your career up until that point?
I guess my father, because he was the one taking me everywhere, and my mum, but without their support I wouldn't have got there, clearly. So my family, before I became pro, it was clearly them. There were different, you know, people at the club, Chelsea Haydock, that would have been a great influence on my career. One of the coaches, Josip Rajhead played for Melbourne Knights or Melbourne Croatia back in the day. So having him for a few years really helped with my development. The team that we were part of, that generation at Chelsea, now Dandy, there's quite a few pros went on from there. Eugene Galekovic was from there. Anthony Palikin turned pro. Anton Kovacic, Joey Rajhead, Daniel Radosevic. I'm sure I'm missing one or two names, but from this small club in the Burbs, like, you know, they turned out five or six pros.
Mm. Well, Eugene was my captain at Adelaide.
There you go. Yeah. So, yeah, we all grew up together. I mean, and not just on the field, off the field, David Davidovich, who, you know, wrote for a long, was a journalist for a long time for the Herald Sun, Fox Sports and the rest, also from that club. So, you know, these small community clubs are able to produce talent and professionals at the highest level. So, I wouldn't say one person was the reason, but that club had a big influence on my progression.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and I guess sort of leading in from, you know, Chelsea Hajduk to Melbourne Knights, massive, massive club. The sister clubs, obviously, the lineage of that club is, I think, understated often.
Mm.
Mark Viduka, yourself, we can go on and on and on. Sort of, what did that club mean to you as a youngster, you know, from Melbourne?
Oh, we all grew up dreaming of playing for that club, you know, and we're lucky to watch them in an era where they were on top or thereabouts most of the time, and they were producing Socceroos and would have great battles against Hellas, and Adelaide City back then were very strong, and Marconi and so forth. So we were, you know, it was a dream come true to have them being interested in me at a certain age and playing for the club. I played for them one season it was for the Colts team, but it was in the National Youth League. And then from there, I think I went to the AIS not long after and signed with them briefly when I was still at the AIS, but went to Hajduk Split, went, came back and played for Perth Glory. But Melbourne Knights was a club that we all dreamt of playing for and represented us, you know, the community, the Croatian community. And so as a Croatian kid or Australian-born but Croatian-blooded kid, it was a dream come true to play for them.
Going to Europe, it's often a daunting task for many people in general, just like to leave Australia, but obviously as footballers, as we just touched on, you know, it's a necessary step to take. Going to Switzerland, FC Zurich, you know, Basel, Thun, I guess we can touch on the earlier stuff at the start, but sort of how did you find that adjustment, you know, leaving as like a 19, 20 year old? You know, it's you know, I'm 22 now, I'm very comfortable here. I could not imagine leaving Australia, leaving, you know, my friends, family, everything, but I guess, was that adjustment period sort of like easy for you? Like, how did you find that initially?
I don't think you can, there's no such thing as easy at that level and leaving home. But my brother brought up a point the other day. He mentioned that from a very young age, when I put my mind to something, I just did it. And over again, I was able to prove that to myself and others. I just did it. Like, there was no doubt in my mind where my destiny was taking me, and that was, I'm going overseas, I'm going to Switzerland, so what? I don't know anyone, I don't know the language, I'm leaving Perth, it was 35 degrees and I went to minus 10 in Zurich. So what? Like, no one cares, you know. Like, quite quickly you realize it's up to you and no one else. So the adjustment period can be hard. But when that's all you want and that's all you know, and there is no second choice, there is no other option. I wasn't enrolled at uni. I was focused on becoming a pro footballer. So because of that, I left no stone unturned. And even though it's, you know, scarred me in many ways, it also allowed me to evolve and become the person I am today. Because, you know, it's okay to struggle. It's okay to suffer. It's okay to not understand life at times. I think through that, you become a better person. You become more empathetic. I wouldn't change a thing.
It's valuable life experience, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like I said, I went over at a different age. I was much earlier, and I was lucky to have my my parents for the first 2 years.
Mm.
So when I was, I think it was 11 turning 12, and by the time before I turned, I think it was just before my 14th birthday, they had left and come back to Australia. So it was more of a different, so I probably wasn't as aware, you know, around my surroundings, and probably didn't sink in for me as much being that age. But you were obviously a much mature age when you did go there. So I imagine it was the same but very different in many ways as well, just purely because of the ages we went over. But one thing that I take away from what you've said is that, like, when you go there, it is just yourself. There's no other option. You go there without, there's no failure. You can't fail, because like you said, you weren't doing uni. Mm. Were you doing any other studies? of any sorts when you first went over?
No, I mean, they try to bring you up. I mean, it's kind of them, whether it be the VISA encourage balance, and I understand why. In theory, it's great, but I don't know many footballers that were able to do both.
Mm.
You're quite often mentally and physically emotionally exhausted.
Mm.
I used to read a lot though, and I still do, so I always took a keen interest in philosophy and spirituality, and then, you know, crime thrillers as well. It's not always challenging, I guess, books or stuff to digest, but you know, to there was no other option, you know, and that the generation that I was a part of, they would all would have been of similar thinking. And they stuck it out. You know, they didn't come back to cushy contracts or cushy lives. And therefore, that persistence, resilience, striving for greatness, or just striving to make it, is why that golden generation existed. I see now we're getting some more boys back into Europe of diverse nationalities. I mean, diverse heritage. And I think with that comes a level of desperation. Which we haven't seen for a while, so hopefully they can stick it out and, you know, fly the flag for a while longer.
Yeah, I think like you said, it's evident now that in more recent times that we're getting some players. You got, you know, like you mentioned before, Jordy Boss and Aidan O'Neill and these sorts of players, Connor Metcalf as well, you know, in these sort of big footballing countries, yeah, Belgium, Germany and places like that. So it's good to see, and probably Riley McGree's another one in the championship as well. So there are players slowly now being able to stick it out, or showing that character that you need and that resilience you need to stick it out to play top flight football, which is ultimately what we need to build another generation that you were involved in. We mentioned that the A-League is probably a lot of the reason why players don't stick it out, because, like you said, they can come back home, live in their home state, sort of relax a little bit, the pressure's off them, earn a very good contract and never really dabble in the heights that they maybe should have. Why do you think players take that opportunity? I know the opportunity is there for them, but why do you think they do that? Because you grow up wanting to be the best that you can be, right? You want to play at the highest level that you possibly can, and we've all got it in us in some extent. If you can play professional football, you've got it in you, right? Especially if you've dabbled in that European environment before. Why do you think they take the easy way out? Just because it's there, or do you think it goes deeper than that?
I don't know. You'd have to ask them. Everyone's circumstances are different. I've not posed the question to them much, so I think the reasons are varying, and there's no right or wrong as well. Like, if someone's prefers to play in this country than abroad, then so be it. There's no judgment from me. I just know to be the best, you have to play against the best. Simple, and the best are in Europe. Not Asia, not the Middle East, not Australia. You have to be over there. So for a lot of us, my dream was to play Champions League. You know, my dream was to play in Serie A. Unfortunately, I didn't make it that far. But, you know, those opportunities aren't afforded to you in other countries. So that's what was my only concern as a young player coming through. Later on, I don't know, I guess things are different for everyone. I don't know why they're making those choices.
Mm-hmm.
I can't speak for them.
It's hard.
You speak of Champions League. You played against the Invincibles. You captained the FC Turin. Played in that competition. What are European nights like? I don't feel like we will ever understand. I'll never understand as an Australian what a European night is like, because it just seems like something that's, it's almost like beyond comprehension. So beyond the confines of understanding for an Australian football fan, what it actually is like.
Well, now when I reminisce it feels like a lifetime ago, or another life, so to speak. I can't even put into words what it feels like to walk out with the Champions League anthem being played over the speakers, being involved in that level. You know, sometimes when you're young, it's maybe a little bit lost on you where you are and what you're doing. There's full stadiums chanting your name and all that kind of stuff. But it's unreal. Like, it's everything you imagine. It's unreal. It's surreal. It's real. Like, it's amazing. It's everything you could imagine, everything you thought it would be, it is, and so much more. But the best part is, all of a sudden you're there and you're matching them. You know, you're playing against people you idolized, but you're matching them, you're dribbling them, you're tackling them, you're defending against them. you're swapping shirts with them, you're having a laugh with them. It's beautiful. I think what's lost at times is the understanding of the fact that it's all about human connection, this life, and being able to be on that level and play on that field. But you're connecting even with your opponents. You know, there are moments where you glance at each other and you laugh at a refereeing decision or something that was said in the crowd, or I don't know, whatever it may be, or you're admiring a piece of skill, you know, even if it was performed against you. It's beautiful when you're on that stage, because it's synchronistic when you're playing against the best, like teams like Arsenal, Dinamo Kiev as well, that era when Red Rebel's playing. It's beautiful, even if you're defending against them and you don't know how you're going to stop them. It's beautiful to watch. You know, when I was playing against Marseille with young boys in the UEFA Cup, Ribéry was still there and Nasri as well. And it's like, you just watch these guys and they're gliding on the pitch. You're like, how are we ever going to stop them? Because, you know, in that era, they were the best of the best. So I was fortunate enough to be on a field at the same time as they were.
Yeah. You see,
you mentioned playing against Arsenal, and I mean, we can't just move on from that so quickly. Was there anyone that sort of took your breath away as a player on that field? And you sort of thought, even if the performance wasn't great, that they'd just been maybe in the presence of anyone who's, in your eyes, that extraordinary as a footballer?
I mean, obviously Thierry Henry. Everyone, like, that's the obvious one to mention.
Yeah.
But, you know, that team was stacked. The only player that wasn't playing anymore there was, I think, Vieira and Petit left.
Yeah.
But that was Fabregas, Pires, Ljungberg.
Mm. Was Bergkamp still around?
Bergkamp, Sol Campbell.
People can only, Neil, you got to understand, people can only imagine to be, like, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was special going to watch Champions League. You got to understand, like, when I was at Chelsea and as a young kid going to watch some of the Champions League nights, but you're talking about playing in the Champions League. You can't compare it. It's ridiculous.
We could have drawn. We could have won. It was great. Yeah, they were incredible. You know, but again, they've got two arms and two legs, and most of them two eyes. So to be able to be out there and play with them, against them, was a dream come true, obviously. Mm. Yeah, I've been fortunate. There's been a few moments in my career, in my life, where I obviously unknowingly or unwittingly as a kid, I dreamt of it and I manifested it and it came true. Everything that I dreamt of came true. And it continues to this day. So be careful of your thoughts. Anything's possible.
Yeah.
Did you swap shirts with anyone?
With all of them. But I gave them all away. I at the very end of my career, I played a season at Dandy City and I was coaching under 13s at the time. So I basically, every game, chose a man of the match for whatever reason. Didn't necessarily have to be the best player or the guy who scored the goal, and they get to choose from my collection.
Oh, so, wow.
That's incredible.
Yeah. That's insane.
And then mid-season, I realized I couldn't balance the two, so I gave the opportunity to every kid in the team to take a jersey of
mine.
And then I just gave away a few others to other kids that were in my sort of vicinity, and I don't have any shirts anymore. There's only one shirt at home, my parents' home, and that's the Socceroos jersey from when we beat Uruguay on penalties.
Yep.
I was on the bench that day, or part of that squad. So that's the only jersey that I've got in my collection. A few people have tried to give them back to me over the years, but to be honest, they were all sitting in a cupboard. And what you'd notice here or any place that you ever come and visit me in, I'm not one for trophies.
Mm.
I don't need a shirt on the wall to reminisce.
Yeah,
I live those moments. I feel like sharing that joy with young kids or whoever else. They've got a story to tell, you know.
Yeah.
But yes, there were Arsenal, Liverpool, Man United, Argentina, Germany, Marseille. You name it, I had every jersey, but you know they've gone to good homes, and I'm glad they're spreading the love.
No, that's a beautiful story, actually. Yeah. Like, not many people would have done that.
I saw this video of we share a friend, Ellie Menjum.
Yeah,
and he's this Twitter video of you like all your shirts are coffee. Like, this is incredible. It's like you're just bringing out shirts like one by one by one. It's incredible.
That's incredible.
Yeah. I've given. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've got people like Ellie, like, he's a beautiful soul and a big football fan. They're all like, we'll safe keep it for you. And I'm like, no, dude, like, I don't, what do I need it? You know, like, there's plenty of jerseys out there that I can buy if, you know, kids that are in my life want to wear them, but I don't need to get those memories back. They're there forever.
That's a very unique perspective.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah. Like I said, I don't know many people that would have done that, and that's probably credit to you and your outlook on things as well.
Yeah. Share it. Like, I lived it, you know. Like, I get goosebumps now thinking about different moments. And, you know, when time's right, I'll visit Twin again and Burn and Split and all these other places. And I'll reminisce with the people there because that part of it, the human side, the human connection side, is something that's never lost.
Yeah.
Those people, those experiences. I'll look upon those times with fond memories, but I don't need to walk back with my jersey on my back for people to tap me on the back and be like, hey, man, like, well done. I don't, when I finished football, it wasn't, my identity wasn't immersed in it, you know? So I don't need that shirt so that you come into my home for us to talk about me. I'd prefer to ask you questions about your life.
Yeah, no, and I do get that sense for you. It's strange because I often find the players who have played at the highest level, right, they're, I wouldn't say more humble than everyone else, but because of the experiences they've had, like, that sort of stuff probably means less to them, if you know what I mean, like the shirts and that. But like, if I relate to someone like me, whereas I didn't reach the heights that Lubo did.
You had a crack from what you're telling me.
I've had a crack.
You did really well.
I never even reached the heights. But like, for example, I'll give you an example just purely about the shirts, like a small aspect of it. In my time, I've been able to get two shirts of players that, like, I really, like, I was like, okay, I'm going to swap shirts. And Henderson was one. When I was at Adelaide, we played against Liverpool, and we played against Man City. I got Gael Clichy's top. But, like, if you said to me part ways of them, not a chance. Like, you know, like, I couldn't do it. Like, I just couldn't do it. But just, you know what I mean? Like, I think through your experiences, and because obviously you got so many of them as well, and sort of sit back probably satisfied with what you've achieved.
Yeah, everyone's different. I see other players that are way more established or reached heights that I never reached, and they've obviously got these beautiful, I guess, billiard rooms, pool rooms, whatever it may be, and they've got, like, it's cool, like, I can appreciate it, but it's just not my vibe, you know. Like, I'd rather,
no, I appreciate that,
I'd rather look at the books that are standing over there and flick you one and be like, check this out, see if you can take something from it.
Yeah. I love that.
That's great.
That's quality. That's amazing. It's a great trait.
Yeah, no, I agree. And obviously, you stuck it out in Europe, and then in that sort of first stint, you know, for a long, long time, obviously, with young boys as well. Sort of describe Swiss football to me, I guess, if you can. Sort of the style of play. I don't think a lot of Australians have gone back there since. I think, obviously, Scott Chipperfield's obviously the most notable one.
Ivan Ergic.
Yeah, Ivan Ergic.
Chose to play for Yugoslavia or Serbia.
Yeah.
One of my best mates. Well, Swiss football, I don't really need to describe it to you. I can just list the players that play at all the top clubs, and that they'll say enough. You know, Shaqiri at Liverpool, Xhaka at Arsenal, the boy that's playing at Man City now, I forget his name.
Akanji.
Yeah. Liechtenstein was at Juventus for a long time.
A good player, right back.
And Bolo's now, is he at Monaco? He went from Schalke to Monaco.
He's at Schalke, I'm not sure where he is now.
But he's back and forth. Like, their players play at all the top clubs. We're in Australia a little bit far removed from what's going on in Europe, but my era, my time there was a lot of investment in the juniors, especially at FC Basel. Gigi Uri, who was the heiress to the Bayer fortune, which is a pharmaceutical company, pumped a lot of money into the club. They built a new stadium, but the senior players got paid well, but so did the junior. But the investment in the juniors sort of was matched. And from that time, Xhaka came through, Shaqiri came through, and Mbolo, like, the list goes on. So to explain Swiss football to you, it's a version of the Bundesliga or the French league, but we don't get coverage here, so you don't understand how good it really is.
It's
a great
definitely.
Stepping stone. They had the Euros there not long after I left, so all the stadiums fit between anywhere between 10,000 to 40,000. Great infrastructure, culturally they're correct, meaning, like, you know, if you've got a contract, they will honour it. Unfortunately, in countries like Croatia, Greece, Turkey, it's a little bit more like the Wild West.
Absolutely.
So it can be tough to acclimatise or adjust.
Yep.
In saying that, I still got ripped off and I lost $500,000 on my first European deal in Switzerland because of the agent that I had at the time got me to sign a contract that I shouldn't have. Even in a country where things are done relatively above the board, you can still be manipulated. What I'm trying to say. But as far as Switzerland's concerned, it's picture perfect. It literally is like a postcard. Got fond memories, obviously, because of the teams I played for. I was able to play in Champions League, UEFA Cup, travel around Europe. It was quite a special time.
Yeah, very special. And coming back to Australia, Melbourne Victory, Archie Thompson's there. There's obviously this famous story of you and Archie. I think Breakfast Gate or something. Yeah, 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 that one.
Non-event, but made into an event. Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Blown out of proportion.
Well, there's reasons for it, but, you know, like, continue with your question.
Yeah, yeah. I just sort of, like, coming back to Australia, sort of, what was the mindset there? Was it sort of like, I need to do this? Or was it a case of just, this is an opportunity? The A-League was, you know, fledgling at that point. Only 2 to 3 years into his existence. Sort of, what was the mentality in coming back?
I was burnt out.
Yeah.
I burnt out. I wanted to come home to Melbourne. It could have been Melbourne City, Melbourne Victory, Melbourne Heart, Hellas or Croatia. It didn't actually matter about the club or the league. I no longer wanted to play in Europe. I was captaining Young Boys. I missed out on going to the World Cup. And I was disillusioned. I'd been on the road for almost 10 years. I did my knee playing for the under-20s. I was captain of Ange's side in the first game. And then I did my groin captaining the Olympic team in our last qualify against New Zealand. And Farina was our coach, and that was the Athens team. So I missed out on 3 years of football. And I was in Europe during that period. And so when I finally sort of found my feet again and I was kicking ass and playing Champions League, I didn't cope well with not being taken to the World Cup. And I never really found my feet again after that, if I'm honest. So I came back at the peak of my powers. Victory just happened to be the team in my hometown. A-League and its formation and Victory winning the league was of no concern to me. I just wanted to be back home. I felt like I needed to be back around family and friends that I could trust and that would make my life somewhat easier. It didn't, but that's a whole different story, and you know, I guess you can ask questions around that, but yeah, the A-League, it didn't matter. I just didn't want to be alone anymore.
And I guess we touched on the Socceroos as well. I think that squad, that team, like, just looking back on it now, like, we always talk about it was the golden generation, but the fact that someone like yourself, like, wasn't like a a consistent contributor sort of at the World Cup and things like that, it really speaks to the depth of quality that we had. And I think, what was it like being involved with the youth national teams at that point? And obviously the senior national team at that point, it's an honour to play for Australia. But obviously you did mention there was obviously a bit of a sour taste following non-selection at the World Cup and things like that. So I guess sort of like describe it to us, sort of that feeling. I guess, George, you can chime in as well, having youth national team experience as well, sort of very differing circumstances, of course, but yeah.
Yeah, well, let's focus on the positives. I mean, the reality is, me being selected or not, I guess it's opinions based, and sometimes coaches feel like they have to go with another player for whatever reason. I don't want to get into their reasoning or my reasoning. It's gone, you know. Mm. It's gone. I prefer to see it as I'm one of the fortunate ones to be part of our greatest era. Or one of our greatest eras. And it was a dream to be on the field in training, you know, playing with Kuehl, Bresch, Dukes, Skoko, Maury, Archie, you know, Grella, the list goes on. Like, there were so many players in that team in that era I was quite lucky to be on the field with, play with, play against. Nothing but fond memories.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's hard to argue with that. I mean, yeah. I think the key that you have to take away from what Lubo is saying is the positives. You know, he was involved in that era. You know, he's part of that team regardless of selection, this and that. He's played with these guys at the highest level.
Yeah.
It's got experiences being part of the golden generation, a generation that we haven't seen for a long time before and haven't seen for a long time after until this day. So you're someone who's got a lot of experience in football, who understands Australian football, and I think, you know, I'm sure we'll lead on to it later in the podcast, but it's someone who we should have involved in our game here.
Oh, 100%.
And we'd be better off for it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Don't know what your plans are, but I hope that you are someone who gets back involved in the system here.
Yeah.
Because I think we could use someone like you, and with your outlook on football and in life as well. I don't think we have enough of that in this game at the moment.
Yeah, unfortunately, when I look at that lineup that I was part of, Many of the Golden Generation are no longer involved, and that's a shame. We need to find a way to get everyone back involved. And it's not just those 20 or 25 players that were part of that team, but all those teams, like all the teams that were in the NSL, all the boys that were part of those NSL, that NSL era, and then the A-League. There has to be a way that we get everyone connected back to the game again, feeling like they're a part of it, because there's a lot of IP there that we're missing out on. All those guys played for 5 or 10 clubs. They've got contacts everywhere. Everyone's got varying beliefs or opinions or ways they see the game, but that's invaluable.
Yeah.
You know, these guys should be involved at club level, even if it's just coming down to Dandy City on a Friday night for fish night and them sharing their stories with the youngsters. I remember as a kid being in those clubs or being a junior, and if there was anyone in the senior team or around the club that was involved at a professional level, I was excited to be around them, to see them at the club. So even if it's just that, you know, there should be more emphasis or more. I know resources make it hard at times, but it'd be good if the varying clubs, someone there was actively seeking to re-engage. And I know Dandy City, David Davutovic does a great job down there.
Yeah, Davo's legend.
He was the one who always kept me connected with the club. I'd always send jerseys or turn up to events because of him. I know at times it can, you know, people have got, they're mainly volunteer based, so it's hard, but we're definitely missing out on a lot of a wealth of knowledge by not having these guys and girls, men and women who have played the game at the highest level, not involved at junior level.
You know,
or senior level.
Again, it raises so many questions, and obviously from each person who did play at that level, it would be sort of individualized to maybe why they don't at the moment, so we can't really tap into that. But what I would say from personal experience, like I'm playing in the NPL top flight at the moment, and just touching on that, like at our presentation night, we had Mark Bresciano there, and you see him sitting there, and I see people talking up at the front on stage. I'm not even looking at them. I was literally looking at him because I'm just thinking of how many times I've watched him play, how many goals I've seen him score, and the ability the guy had. I did, like, I loved him a lot as a player, and I was just like, good on him. He's coming down to Avondale supporting. We had Johnny Aloisi there as well, because obviously he's part of Western United, and the two clubs are sort of well connected in that sense as well, and he got up and said a few words as well, which I thought was brilliant. So for me as well, like I said, I'm player slash fan of a certain age now, where we saw you guys come through, right? And as us as younger kids, and seeing if we could take our football seriously and get to the levels that you boys could, because that's all we had to aspire to here in Australia at that time. European football is less accessible to watch, so you guys were the ones that we were watching, and just being around those sort of guys who have had those experiences and being at those levels. Even I touched on Eugene Galekovic before, and you also mentioned that obviously you've known him as well, and him being my captain at Adelaide United and being involved in Socceroos at the time, that like he was, just the knowledge and the experience that these guys have is so valuable.
Or even if it isn't, it doesn't even have to be that deep. Just sharing a joke, you know, being able to rub shoulders. I don't know, and even standing in the line ordering a hot dog, but you're standing next to one of your heroes.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Like, you remember that shit as a kid, you know. It means something, and that's why, like earlier, I said I gave away all my jerseys because it means something to the kids.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of my ex-teammates and opponents would love to give back, but somewhere along the way they lost touch or maybe fell out of love with the game. But I'm sure in the right, you know, setup or environment, a lot of would get back involved.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think even for me, like I did not play at a high level at all. I was literally playing at my local club, North Caulfield. And I think on occasion we'd have... I was coaching there, I think, 5 years ago for, like, the underage. Like, Dean Bizanis came down. He was in Melbourne City at the time. And, like, just all the kids just getting around him and stuff like that. Like, little things like that, I think, when players have a specific connections to clubs, I think South Melbourne are definitely trying to do that. And this morning we know that Spurs are going to come down to Australia as well. You know, imagine for Ange Postecoglou to come to like a South underage training session or
it'd be nuts.
It will change these kids, like the perception of football entirely.
Yeah.
I think we need more of that.
But someone in that role, though, who's that figure, you know, he could do so much for the game here, and he already has.
And yeah,
he
exactly.
does. I think he does. He's done a great deal. I don't think anyone's. I mean, maybe other than Johnny Warren and Les Murray, I don't think anyone's had such a great influence.
Mm.
As he has, you know, he's definitely a pioneer, and put us on a world stage, and you know, to have him representing us at the highest level, we're quite lucky.
What was he like to work with?
He was great, and he's no different to what you see in his interviews and what he says. He keeps a respectful distance from his players, but what you see is what you get. I was his captain at a young age, and every time I bump into him from. Ever since then, it's always smiles and a laugh and a hug. He's, you know, a great guy and doing a great job.
Yeah, no, he's doing an excellent job. Hopefully, he comes down and, yeah. They have to train at Lakeside Stadium, right? If they do come down, surely.
Surely.
I'd imagine. He's definitely never forgotten where he's come from.
Yeah.
And just had an interesting ride, a journey. And so he definitely is someone that I imagine would love to give back, and then continues to do so. Whether or not it fits in with their schedule, I don't know what the tour's like. They obviously probably played in Melbourne
3 days after their last game against Sheffield. So
oh, wow.
One training session, and I think but
it's good. Yeah. It's great that you know these teams are coming out and exposing the population to football at the highest level.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The Jets era was interesting, I think, to say the very least. You know, you had a couple of very, very good seasons there. What's it like to be in, you know, the Hunter region? You know, I've never personally visited Newcastle. I'm not sure. You've obviously had played away trips there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we stayed there during COVID.
Yeah.
In the hub.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The hub was in Newcastle. Newcastle's stunning. It's kind of like a hidden secret. Mm. Not so much anymore, but it's beautiful there. I loved my time at the Jets. Loved the community, the club. Had two different owners, two or three different coaches. So I guess that's interesting when you've only spent 2 years there. But I guess everyone was there. They wanted to see the club grow. Obviously, Tinkler got involved before him. Con was there, and he was there for a long time. Nothing but fond memories. I love New Inn. I love the people.
Yeah.
Obviously, love that beachside lifestyle. Easy to fall in love with that place.
Yeah, fantastic. And then you went to South for a brief period before you went to a Hayduk split. Obviously, I'm assuming to just keep fitness up and whatnot. South Melbourne, massive, massive club, VPL era. That was, you know, was that pre-CT or was it CT?
I had Eddie Krinčević, I went there because of Eddie.
Yeah.
And we had a, you know, good team. I feel like we were winning games. My memory fails me at times. But I then obviously left to go to Hayduk.
That was
always the reason why I went there.
And that's sort of what I want to touch on now, like boyhood club. Like it means a lot to a lot of, you know, Croatians in Australia. And
yeah, before I even arrived there, I had the emblem tattooed on my back. So yeah. That was that's how passionate I was about that club. So weirdly enough, ended up playing there, which is surreal.
Yeah.
And it was a dream come true, you know, to walk out on that stadium and play against Dinamo in the league or play against Stoke in a European Cup qualifier. You know, it's when you're when you're of those origins and then you go back and play for your hometown club, even though you're born in this country or a different country, it's something indescribable. And the fans and how passionate they are, they're unlike any others. You know, there are a few clubs in Europe that have got that level of tribalism. You know, that would be Napoli or Pauk or, I don't know, Fenerbahce and whoever else, Boca in Argentina. That's what Hajduk Split means to the fans in Dalmatia, in that part of Croatia. So it's incredible. The pressure and the intensity is like, you know, I think when I first signed, I had a headache for a week. It was that, like, didn't matter where I went, people would stop you. Obviously, having a big head doesn't help. But, you know, it was a beautiful time, interesting time. Like many, like all the clubs I played for, there were ups and downs, but I look back with nothing but fond memories. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, just...
I mean, to play for the club that you've always admired and supported and that means a great deal to you is something that very few can sort of maintain and achieve in their career. So like, I think people got to understand the magnitude of that as well. And how old were you when you went there?
31. So I'd been back for a few years. I had opportunities to go back to Europe almost as soon as I arrived back at Victory. Within a few months, I could have gone back and played for varying clubs. But
So this is purely because of the club and who they were, and that's what made you want to leave again to go?
Yeah, well, I had the opportunity to play in China for more money, and I chose to go to Croatia.
That's beautiful. So you don't hear that now. No. Like, you won't hear that. I can guarantee you now, you will not hear that. As soon as someone gets offered more money to go somewhere else, now it's off. Not even a thought.
Yeah, it's definitely more commonplace now, and I think to have that mindset, it's a very unique sort of thing to have. I don't know. I feel like nowadays, the new generation coming up now will come up supporting A-League clubs. A lot of them are coming up supporting A-League clubs.
Hmm.
To have that level of like sort of resonating with that club is very important.
Hmm.
And I think we should really get a lot more of that. I think Jake Brimmer is a good example. Yeah, he was at Victory, and he was in like the Northern Terrace, just like ripping. Well, I'm saying he was ripping flares, but
that was my reality when I was supporting Melbourne Croatia and then Melbourne Knights, you know. And I was brought up in a culture where that was the be all and end all. And if you were lucky enough to play for Hajduk or Dinamo in Croatia, then it's like and then obviously if you get to play for Australia and all the rest of it. So I grew up, I was one of those fans that was clear to everyone. I guess that's why I was able to connect with fans so well, because I never forgot that I was one of them, you know, and that's why we play the game, you know, is because of that passion and that understanding. It's, you know, you leave everything out there on the field, and when you, if the fans see you doing that regularly, then they're obviously going to back you.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's funny because, like I said, I was sort of the back end of the NSL South Melbourne era. That's, you know, being a Greek as well. My family used to go to a lot of the games. My mum grew up going to the games with my grandfather, and my grandfather's no longer with us. But I remember being quite emotional after playing in South Melbourne last year, and we beat them in round 25. Because he used to go regardless, and he used to see all of his friends there all the time. And we used to get to games, and there'd be like around the back where the old canteen was. You know, I don't know if you know, but there was like an old canteen as you walk through the gates from the lakeside. And you go around, and there's like, again, as all the old Greeks used to get there together, and they still all talk before the game, and, you know,
beautiful,
share stories. But, and we used to go sit in our seats, but he would stay there. You wouldn't see him for the whole time. Like, he'd be with his friends, and you'd somehow trickle back home after. And I just thought, like, in my head that day after we beat him 2-1 and we clinched the premiers pretty much that day, is how he would have probably felt, because he loves South Melbourne, but it would have been the one game where I know he would have been supporting me over the club he loved. Yeah. So that was a sort of a beautiful moment for me. And then, as you were touching on, you know, the club you support and what it means to you. And I know in his eyes, you know, he'd be so sad that I don't play for them, but because I'm at Avondale. Yeah. But it is funny how that all worked out in the end, being a Greek. But now I'm obviously where I am now, and I love the club, and I'm enjoying where I am. But I can sort of resonate with what you're saying, and a similar experience.
We're brought up to love a club, right? So that passion is what keeps these clubs around, because a lot of them, you know, like I said earlier, are volunteer based. And so your grandfather or my father or whoever it may be in the community, these places were their home away from home, you know, and that's correct. Why being a country of immigrants, visitors in this land of our First Nations, being their guest, initially our cultures or our, you know, ancestors connected through soccer, through church, through their community club. And so that's what South was, that's what Melbourne, Croatia was. They were places for them to connect.
Fundamentally. I guess that's something I didn't really have, that, like, to be honest. And
But you were saying recently you're connecting with Maccabi.
Yeah, Hakoa, but like same thing, Maccabi Hakoa.
Yeah.
Like, for me, it's sort of like I didn't come from those backgrounds. So for me, it's a bit of a different sort of scenario, I suppose, in that sense. But I think to have that experience that you had
that might have been in the first, second or third division that would have been places for your culture.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, to connect with, you know.
Yeah.
And I understand, you know, when the A-League came around, that they went in a different direction because they wanted to be accessible to everyone, and I think it was required, obviously, and because we want to encourage everyone to be part of this beautiful game.
Absolutely,
100%. I want to touch on NPL a little bit, and sort of a VPL when you were involved, but actually you were involved in the NPL with Dandong City. So NPL football is it's a wonderful and weird place. Yeah. I love it.
What a place.
Yeah, it's amazing.
The food's the best.
Oh, yeah. Incredible. But I guess sort of just leaning on that NPL factor, sort of what's it like, do you think, compared to the NSL, to be involved with these, you know, NPL clubs? Obviously, you're at South Melbourne, who were also involved in the NSL, Melbourne Knights, Melbourne Croatia. It's a very different vibe at the moment. Sort of how do you feel about it at the moment, and sort of leading into the NST, obviously there's a lot of work to be done with a lot of these clubs. What steps do you think need to be taken, I guess, from a off the field perspective and I guess on the field, do you think?
Look, I'm not heavily involved, so I don't really know where it's at, to be honest. Like, you're asking me a question, I haven't been involved in football for 7 or 8 years now, so I don't know the level. I've been to watch some recent games or parts of games, and the level's decent. Club infrastructure, I don't know. There are obviously some clubs that are more professional than others. The 8 teams that want to be part of the second division, or are part of the second division, obviously they will step up their levels of professionalism. There's a lot of hope there now for players coming through, that there are other pathways. There are more teams for them to shine, to show their worth. The NPL in general, it seems like they're trying to do their best to raise the level of the game in this country. How clubs are run, standards and all the rest of it, I don't know much about it anymore.
You've got to remember as well, in respect to what you're saying as well, like the NSL was national.
Yeah.
So it was a different level. Whereas the NPL, very state to state. And yes, we do have the strongest one here in the NPL Victoria. And some people also believe NPL New South Wales as well. But I think there's really no comparison between the two.
No, and you don't need to compare anyway. Like, the NSL was the NSL, and what the NPL now is a different entity.
Mm.
But I'm not involved in a way that I can pass too much comment, judgment on.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that can lead us onto another thing as well, is that at the minute, you know, you've chosen not to be involved for a certain amount of years. What does the future look like for you, and what do you have any ambition to take a step back into the game? Because I know we mentioned as well, it'd be good for that sort of generation to be involved in football.
Yeah, well, of late, I sort of announced, I guess, end of last year, which is sort of November, December, that I'm actively seeking to be back in the game, or I'm making myself available again. And then that's going to appear in many different ways. There is no one way to be involved. It doesn't mean I don't have to be involved in NPL or A-League level to be involved in the game. But right now, it's not defined. I'm working on a couple of interesting projects. I've met with all the Melbourne clubs, some of the Sydney clubs, the FA. Like, for example, I guess I don't like to be pigeonholed. I've never have. I have always struggled, I guess, to be told, being told what to do. So, in saying that, it can be hard to work in club land because they will automatically put me in a box.
Yeah.
Whereas I've never existed in that little box that sometimes they want you to live and breathe in. I'll give you an example. Recently, my buddies were in town. They're international, world-famous pop stars. And I thought it wouldn't be a bad idea to connect them with the local game. Now, because of my reach and my ability to bring people together, all of a sudden, there's a shot on the Socceroo Instagram page now of Nick Jonas wearing a Socceroo jersey. Now, I was the one who was able to create that moment.
Wow.
For example, there, because I've lived a different life, I don't want to be restricted to just football. I'll only get involved if it makes sense to me. I don't need to be coaching. I don't need to be doing anything necessarily. I just want to give back to the game right now and help. So it probably makes more sense for me to operate from a distance and consult in the game rather than be involved directly with any one club right now anyway.
Beautiful.
That's fantastic. And I guess sort of what do you want, I guess, your legacy in Australian football to be in this sort of next, you know, phase of your professional career in that sense, sort of, you know, re-entering the game, sort of, do you feel like there's like a certain desire different to that of your playing career in that sense, or?
Definitely. When you're playing, you're quite narrow-minded in your outlook. It's all about you, and it's all about you achieving your dreams. Now, being older, it's no longer about me necessarily. I don't need you to have known where I've played. I don't even need you to know that I exist. Talking of legacies, and I've been thinking about it of late. I just want to help. I just want to create pathways for kids. I want to be able to influence the game and the people in a positive way. What that looks like, it's yet to be defined, and it never has to be. It can be from rocking up to a game, South Melbourne Knights, and like I said, waiting in the line to order a Subo, and I crack a joke with a kid, or I see a kid kicking a ball, so I have a kick with him. It can be that minute. It doesn't have to be on a grand scale. Obviously, when you've played at the top level, there's the ability to bring people together and so you can have a greater influence. So if I can use the platform that's been afforded to me to create change, then I will. It just, I don't know exactly right now, what that's going to look like. But, you know, if you know me well enough, you know that I'm a bit of a dreamer, so anything's possible.
Love that.
Love it.
Love it.
Put the nail on the head.
We'll do a couple of quick questions because, you know, the masses want to know what you're up to, as always. Yeah. Question from, I'm not even joking, Lee Brocks on Facts. That's literally his Twitter name. What do you look for in the podcast you listen to?
Well, of late, it's either comedy or spirituality. I mean, informative, right? So I want to learn something, but you don't always want to constantly be digesting information. So, you know, whether it's the Sushi Mango podcast or someone else's, sometimes it's good just to laugh at life and how silly it is. Yeah. And then other times it can be like listening to Ram Dass and then also laughing at life and how silly it is, because when you know, it's all perception and sometimes it's not even real.
We didn't even have enough time to touch on this. I think this could have been like 5 hours if we wanted it to be. But sort of like, we've completely missed a part about you moving to Bondi and all that.
Bondi, geez.
Yeah.
My life as an adolescent.
Yeah. Mike Tuckerman, a respected journalist. I would love to know what he's been up to since retiring from football. Well, listen back to the last 60 minutes. I'm sure you can find out. But I guess, yeah, sort of like your day-to-day at the moment, sort of... obviously, you touch on Bondi and various things like that, but yeah.
I think I set it off air basically that for the last 7 or 8 years, I've owned and ran a variety of hospitality businesses, whether they be cafes, restaurants, or bars. And then end of last year, I decided I'd no longer be in hospitality. But yeah, that's what I did. I moved to Bondi and I was a dude on the corner in a cafe and just happily knocking off every day by 1 o'clock and then sitting on the beach and reading a book. Love working on my tan,
the best.
Sipping on margaritas at the time. I've now suffered whatever you want to call it. I was going to say food poisoning or margarita poisoning. I've had too many those and spritzers. But man, I was just enjoying life. I was doing the things that I guess most kids were doing when they were 17, 18, living life without much care, but a lot of wonder.
Yeah.
Well, you had a lot of catching up to do because you. Sacrifice a lot and dedicate a lot of your life to playing football.
Yeah, I just wanted to be part of the community. I moved cities every year or two from the age of 17, so I was never really grounded, and I just wanted to be part of the local community. So that's what Bondi afforded me. I was you know, became a part of it. You know, and when I say that, it's Bondi's paradise. I was quite lucky that I'm
so nice.
I mean, lucky. So nice. Well, I wouldn't call it luck. It was pretty obvious to me that I want to live there. So I just moved
it's the
there.
Best, man.
And walked into my mate's cafe and said, "You need a waiter."
The best. Alvaro Rodriguez says, "What was it like meeting Sam Newman on that AFL footy show Street Talk that one time?" It's a famous clip at this point.
Yeah. I wish I showed more of it because sometimes I look back or I've seen it or I show people and I'm like, oh, why would I even tell anyone to look at this interview, because they didn't show everything that I spoke.
Yeah, it's just like I don't know. It was just so, he's like so standoffish. You just. I don't know. I was
tired of seeing people in positions of power or influence diminish others that are not so fortunate, and that's why I went up to him. He expected some sort of version of a quarrel or a fight, but I was just walking over there with peace and kind intention. And I guess that's displayed or portrayed. What was it like looking into his eyes? I don't know. He looked sad to me.
Yeah. He's a pretty sad guy, to be honest. But, yeah.
Fair.
And I guess the last one, we'll just sort of leave it on from Samuel 8:2. Where did you battle the hardest to grab and hold your starting position?
Battle the hardest. Well, maybe Basel. I never even played there, but I was there during their Champions League era, and our team was full of internationals. Ivan Ergic and Scott Chipperfield were in the first 11, two good friends of mine. I just couldn't get into the team. I didn't even get a look in. I probably deserved to have a crack, but that was pretty tough. And then, you know, I guess maybe the Socceroos, but that wasn't long-lived. So I don't know. Like, I kind of was lucky enough wherever I was a starter. I invariably captained most of the teams that I played for, or all of them. But I guess a real battle then, if I think about it now as I speak, when I came back from Hajduk Split when I was young the first time and I signed for Perth, I paid a fitness coach outside of the club to train extra. So we would train with the team every day in the afternoon, but I paid a coach to train 3-4 times a week on my own with him just to raise my levels of fitness. Even though I was captain of the AIS team that won everything, even though I was already part of the Socceroos team, young Socceroos, and I was captain there as well, I had to bust my ass to break my way into that team. And the captain, Gareth Naven at the time, was the one who basically gave up his position for me to get my start.
Wow.
So that's the clearest memory I have of trying to break into a team. My father at the time was like, why don't you come back to Melbourne, play for Melbourne Knights, you know, your boyhood club and all the rest of it, because I probably would have just, seemingly I would have gotten a first 11 gig easier than what I did. But lucky I stuck it out, because before you know it, I was playing in front of 43,000 at Subiaco in the grand final against Wollongong, and the semi-final against Wollongong as well. We were playing at the sold-out crowds and playing in front of the Shed, playing for Perth Glory. It meant so much at the time. They were clearly the best team and best country best club in the country.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. I think this could have gone for like 3 hours, but yeah. Limitations.
Probably wouldn't have, because I would have stopped it. No, I'm kidding.
No. Thank you so much, and yeah, really, really appreciate you coming on, and yeah, thank you so much for letting us record here as well. We're honoured, and
yeah, it's an honour. Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming to our home and taking an interest. Sorry, I didn't ask you guys enough questions about your own lives, but I guess no one wants to hear about you. No, I'm kidding.
Hey, you're not wrong.
But obviously, we'd love to see you back in the game, and I think in any way, shape or form, whatever
any capacity.
Yeah, maybe even ripping players.
Rip a few players, mate, that's it.
See you in the terrace next week at Victory.
I wear them, I don't rip them anymore.
Awesome, right.
Thank you.
Thank you, cheers.